You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson.
Sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. The friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Discover our membership packages to help you grow your business at obcn.co.uk.
Good morning, this is Get Radio. Welcome to the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment. Every week during the show, we share the stories, the expertise and the knowledge of business leaders large and small with you, the listener. And this week is going to be no different. On today's show, we're going to be talking all about people. We're going to be talking about what's happening in the employment market. Some of the things you should really consider as employers. And to do that, there was no other person that I was going to ask to join me, but Katie Aldridge of the HR department in Newbury and South Oxfordshire. This is a Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson. I really look forward to introducing Katie after this. Get Radio. Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, today we're talking about all things people, really. And to do that, we're joined by the wonderful Katie Aldridge of the HR department, Newbury and South Oxfordshire. Welcome, Katie.
Oh, thank you, Ben. Thank you for having me. You're too kind.
No, thank you so much. Thank you so much. So for those who don't know you, tell them all about yourself and the HR department in Newbury and South Oxfordshire.
Yeah, of course, no problem. So my background was the corporate world, and I left that over 8 years ago now to start my own business. So I took all the skills and knowledge that I'd learnt in that arena, and now I apply it to small and medium-sized businesses all within Newbury and South Oxfordshire. So what we do is provide everything that big corporates have in their HR function, but designed for much smaller businesses and, of course, at a fraction of the cost.
Absolutely, absolutely. And for those who don't know you, I definitely recommend going and checking out your website and social media, because you always share some really, really good content there. The most difficult question across 200 shows of the Business Brunch for all of our guests is choosing a song on the radio. It's always that DJ vibe, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you have kindly chosen a song for our listeners this morning. What is your song choice and why have you picked it?
Yeah, so I put quite a lot of thought into this. So I knew in advance I'd be asked to do this. And so I did think quite carefully. The song I have chosen, Ben, is by a group called the American Authors, and it's called The Best Day of My Life. So the reason why I've chosen it is, you know, we all know that life can throw curveballs. It can be difficult at times, and my experience is that it's not what life throws at you, it's how you handle it that matters. And this song for me, it's such a positive, future-oriented song. And it really, for me, it epitomises that, you know what, when life is tough, hang on, hold on tight, because better's coming.
Oxfordshire Station, Get Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Following that really good song choice chosen by Katie, which I think is so fitting, isn't it, to the world of people and HR. We heard about Katie's business and the HR department, Newbury in South Oxfordshire, but also heard a little bit about Katie's background. So, Katie, it'd be really good to start this section with just a really big question, really. What are you seeing on the ground? And, like, what's your predictions, I guess, for 2025?
Yeah, of course, no problem. So general observation, we have around about 35 retained clients across Newbury and South Oxfordshire, all different industry sizes, sectors, all different sizes. Smallest has probably got 5 employees, largest has got 120. So you can imagine when they're all in different industry sectors and all different sizes, some growing, some downsizing, there's always something going on. We have noticed, I look for trends because I work only with companies within this geographical location. I'm always looking for trends across those customers, irrespective of their industry. And currently, we have noticed that a real nervousness of business owners about what the future holds. You know, we're living in really unsettled times. The global economy, the global issues that we're experiencing, the changes in leadership that we have had and have got more to come. We've been through really tough times with inflation. Although that seems to have stabilized, we just don't know what the future holds. And I'm seeing that reflected in the way that our customers are reacting to. They're much more nervous about decision making. They're much more cost conscious. So as a result of that, we're seeing them really focusing on retaining their employees, making sure that they're trying to engage their employees to the best of their ability, making sure that their remuneration packages, what they're paying and the benefits that they're offering are value for money, but also what the employees would like to help support them to make sure that they have got the best value for money. But also, we're also seeing that they're focusing more and more about not just retention, engagement, but also performance management. So making sure that they are really focused about what they're asking their employees to be doing, and then working alongside, meeting with them really regularly to ensure that they're staying focused, staying on track. And what that means is actually we've certainly in the last 3 to 6 months, we've found an increase, in fact, in management development training, helping managers to understand how to manage their employees.
Amazing. Let's unpick those pieces in reverse order, if that's okay. And let's start with management training, because I think one of the things that I often see as a recruiter is, and let's use this stereotypical sales team, because I think it's really easy to understand, isn't it? Is you have a sales team, the manager leaves or a management vacancy becomes available. The top salesperson often will get that. And within really great organizations, they will work with a provider, or they will put together a really structured training plan, and they'll be looking at personality profiles, et cetera, in order to ensure that that's a good transition. But for a lot of organizations, it will very much be this person selling the most. They're suddenly the salesperson, and it takes a whole new set of skills there. And often that individual doesn't work out because they haven't had the support, and then doesn't necessarily want to step back down to work in the sales team. And altogether, everybody's been a loser. So the organization have lost their best salesperson. The team have not had the management they need. And actually that individual was doing really well in the job and now in the job market. So I've painted a little bit of a dull picture there, but I think it's quite an important one, isn't it? In terms of that support, in terms of transitioning into management, or even existing managers, ensuring that they're getting that structure and that training and that development to enable them to be a really good manager. What's your take on that? And what does good management training and support look like for the business owners listening at home?
Yeah, of course. And by the way, I know all about salespeople. So for 5 years, I worked in a global business only with 1,800 salespeople when I joined. So I love working with salespeople. I love their mindset and their approach to life. But you're right, quite often, and not just in sales, but in any business, where there's an opportunity for someone to step up into a management role, quite often it's the best of sales is what you describe, the best salesperson that gets promoted into that role. Managing sales and managing people, although there's a lot of similarities, there are some very key differences that unless you've really thought it through and consider what the similarities and differences are, can mean you're setting that individual up to fail. I have a belief that the skills you use in selling, the skills that in terms of soft skills, you know, negotiating, discussing, agreeing, are the same skills that you do need to manage people. It's just the context is different. And so thinking about how it's different and how it's the same is really key. So that's how we think about is the approach to really think it helping as part of a recruitment process, looking at what the role entails, and if there is a significant amount of people management within it, going through a full robust assessment process, even if they are the only candidate. Don't just slot them straight into the role, because part of recruitment is looking about their capabilities, but also where their areas for development might be. And if what comes out of that is that, for example, they are really comfortable achieving sales metrics, but they're really uncomfortable about having challenging conversations, then let's talk about that. Let's see what we need to put in place. The other thing about recruiting and promoting internally is sometimes it's quite hard for your colleagues to recognise that you've moved into a management role. And so that's not just the transition for the employee, but there's absolutely having them think about how are they going to manage those relationships differently. When they've been peers in the past, how are they going to be able to have those difficult conversations, knowing that it may well affect their personal relationship? So it's really thinking through all of those things as well.
No, absolutely. And it really resonates with me. For earlier in my career, I was the youngest person in a sales team, but I got promoted and I was leading a team with many of the team 20 or 30 years older than me. And actually, do you know what? The team were so kind to me. But actually, looking back, I absolutely cringe with, you know, I was trying to do my best. But I think, like, it was just, I think I got through it because of luck as opposed to support or as opposed to own skill or being ready. So it really, really does resonate that second piece as well, because I think that actually it's worth remembering that I suppose there's different stakeholders to every relationship. There's the employer, there's the team, there's the individual, and as you rightly say, it's really, really important that all of those stakeholders are considered. Katie, you mentioned the word recruitment earlier, and obviously I'm going to jump on that. I bet you couldn't have guessed. And I think that it is really, really key that two things. I think firstly that even if you do have one applicant, even if you are desperate to fill the role in inverted commas, I genuinely believe that the biggest cost in recruitment is when it goes wrong. And actually, I think that the worst thing that you can do is settle. And I'd just be really keen for you to share your thoughts with the listeners in terms of what does a really robust recruitment process look like? And I appreciate there isn't necessarily a one size fits all, but what are some of the things that those listening right now should really consider when recruiting? And what's your views on what you should do if you're not quite sure?
Oh, brilliant questions. Thank you. And in fact, again, we've been running some very recruitment workshops recently to help with exactly that. You know, we look at with our customers, we look at when they're recruiting, the kind of statistics, you know, how long it's taken to recruit, the caliber of the CVs that are coming through. And also, do you know, there's a statistic that cost of poor recruitment can be three times the amount that you've paid in salary for that person. So thinking it through really, really carefully is really critical. We always really start with the vacancy itself. So where's the need come from? Is it come from a resignation, or is it through business growth or transition within the business? And really scoping out that role. When we do this in our workshop, we say, right, let's say you're buying a car. You've got a budget of £40,000. How would you go about working out what's the right car for you? So you might start looking at the size of the car you want, the kind of toys that it might have in it, the range that it might have, the kind of fuel it might have. You might look at the kind of, you know, the brand might be important to you, reputation, perhaps reliability. You'll go through all of this stuff to work out the criteria of the car that you really, really need that will fit your needs. Then once you've done that, let's say you've decided you want to buy a Mercedes. So you know what the car is. You've probably worked out what model of Mercedes you want. Then you'll start talking to people about it. You might go and do some research on the internet. You might go and test drive. You might go and find out who in your network has got one of those cars and what they think about it. You might look at the cost of the parts and replacement and all of those things before you've even set foot inside it. Then you go and test drive it, and then finally you'll be assessing for yourself whether it really, really fits your needs. Translate that into recruiting someone for your business. Think about all of that preparation you do before you've even started looking. That's what we think you should be doing when you're recruiting, before you even think about going out to market. Really scope the role, talk to other stakeholders, talk to people who'll be working with them. Really make sure you have a really robust job profile of what's required, what skills and knowledge are required, what kind of personality type might fit into that specific team, and how it fits with your company culture. So once you've scoped it, find yourself a really great recruitment agency. I've got one I can recommend if you would like me to. And work with them, give them the brief, give them time to ask good questions about the role of the company, so they have really understand what you're looking for. If you do have a good recruitment agency, then they will help to really source the right candidates that will fit your company and that role. I always do an initial telephone screen, maybe 20 minutes. We talk about recruiting for mindset, because skills are trainable. So you start with the CV. If the CV is broadly in line with what you're looking for, then an initial 20 minutes, no, half an hour maximum into a telephone screen to get to know them. And at those, I ask some very, very generic questions around, I've got their CV in front of me. What are they looking for? What's their skills? What's their ambitions? What's their expectations in life? And it just helps. That's a really easy question for someone to answer, because I'm asking them about them. What's important to them? And it gets me to feel, listen to the language that they're using, the kind of expectations they want. And I'm all the time, I'm looking to see whether I think they're a good cultural fit. So we go through those kind of questions just to get to know them, to see if I think they'll fit with my culture, for example. And if that's the case, then I'll think more broadly. So upfront, as part of the preparation, we'll have thought through the selection process. So competency-based interviewing is one option, but statistically, if you just use interviewing on its own, you've got about a 30% chance, roughly, of getting the right fit for the role. So we look at using other tools as well. If they are going to be talking to customers, we might build in a presentation, or if we've got some they're likely to be doing for us, for example, we'll be asking them to advise on employment legislation. So I'll give them some scenarios to review and prepare in advance. I'm really clear with these things. You know what? I don't mind if you go and do some searching on the internet and just tell me how you've gone about it, where you've got your sources of information, so I can also use that as the basis for seeing how they would go about approaching a situation. And we also do something called DISC profiling, so personality profiling, to get people's preferred styles. And the reason I'm doing that is because I'm looking to see whether they've got the natural skills and attributes for the role, and also how they might fit in with the rest of the team and their skills and profiles. So we've got three or four different assessment approaches. And then they come in for an interview. Which I use my whole team for example. And the reason I do that, because I'm thinking about, even if I think they're a good fit, the more people that they speak to as a candidate, the more rounded picture I get about whether they're going to fit with the team. If I can, I'll get a customer involved as well, because again, their views are really important to me. So that once and if want if there are any concerns, I absolutely would want people, want those involved, to tell me about them, because I want to know, I want to make sure that that fit is really, really robust. So by this time, they've spoken to me two or three times. They've met the team. They found out where we operate. I've got their profile. We've talked it through with them. So we've got a really good picture about whether we think they'll fit with us. And they've also had a really good opportunity to work out whether they like what they're seeing. So that's it comes from a really informed space. And then if once enough is made, if they accept, we start talking to them right from then. If they're on a 1 or 2 month notice period, we'll be talking to them ideally at least once a week. And as it gets closer, almost every day. If we can get them
Absolutely.
come in and chat to us or go for a lunch with us, so much the better. So that when they do come on that first day, it feels they're really excited about it, but it's not so much of a concern because they know the team. They feel they've almost integrated already.
No, absolutely. I think one of the things that's often forgotten in interview processes, which I think you've covered really, really well there, Katie, is it's about all the factors, and it's really, really important that actually that the business and the individual are so aligned that actually one of the phrases that I love in recruitment is my goal is to ensure that when you've been working for that organization, a year down the line, you say, do you know what, Ben? That was exactly as you described. That was exactly as I was expecting. And to every candidate and every role, there will be a good, bad, and ugly. There really will. And it's really, really important that both parties are really transparent and understand that. So no, that's really, really helpful. Let's have another song, and we'll continue the conversation after this.
Discussing topics that impact local businesses and their owners. This is the Business Brunch. Sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network, the friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Sign up to our mailing list at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, thank you for joining us. So today, I'm joined by Katie Aldridge of the HR department, Newbury and South Oxfordshire. And together we're really talking about the world of people in 2025, whether that be planning for hiring, whether that be retaining your staff, whether that be, I guess, predictions for the employment market, really things for you to consider as an employer to really protect that biggest asset, and in a lot of ways, for a lot of us, the biggest investment that many of us will make in our business. Katie, at the start of the previous section, one of the things that was touched on was retention is really, really important, and I couldn't agree more. Retention will always be cheaper, firstly, and we shouldn't just do it for money, but also it adds consistency. If you've got somebody really great in your team, why would you want to lose them? But I think one of the things that often is underrated, and I'm gonna come out with a stat here, is when a candidate goes to hand their notice in, and they accept a counter offer, 9 out of 10 candidates will then leave within 12 months. And I think my very strong opinion is going one step further than that. I think the moment an employee starts applying for jobs or looking at jobs, actually it's probably a little bit too late at that point. What's your view on that point before we go deeper into retention? Because I think it'd be really useful for the listeners.
I agree. There's lots of evidence to show that if people are broadly being paying market rates, then as the, and that they're then as long as they are comfortable in the role, they're likely to stay. It's only that when then there something else is wrong typically, that money becomes an issue. And although most people will say they've left for money, usually there's something else behind it that's made them start thinking about looking elsewhere. So I totally agree with you. And once they start looking, I talk about their feet are pointing at the door. So even if you do resign and you give them a counter offer, the reality is mentally, more often than not, they've moved on and it's just a matter of time, which absolutely plays to what you've just said.
No, absolutely. And just in terms of the retention piece, what do you believe are the steps to ensure that you are retaining staff really well? Whether you be an organization who has real retention issues, and the first thing to do is to work with somebody amazing like yourself, because it's quite difficult to fix, isn't it, when you've got real retention issues? Or whether it be an organization that has really good retention, but actually it's really important in the modern market that we're not complacent. So what's your take on retention,
Yeah,
and
so
what can
I
employers
do have a
do?
very healthy view on retention. I don't necessarily think retention for retention's sake is a good thing. I think there's something around allowing people to go, if they really are, if you really can't fit with their needs, but if they're good employees, having the door open for them to come back. There's definitely something about going and getting experience elsewhere that you can then bring back into the business in the future. So retention, yes, but retention of the right people and for the right reasons. So we use some really good material about how do you attract and retain the skills and knowledge that you want. And it always starts with you as a business owner having a really good business plan and business strategy in place. So once you know what your business is and where your business is going and what you need, then you make sure that if you know what your business is going, you'll know or you have an idea about what skills and knowledge you need to have in the business for you to achieve that. And once you've got that bit, then that factors down into, well, what current skills do I have in the business and what skills and knowledge do I need to bring in and how am I going to do it? And have I got time to train those skills internally? Or actually, is it going to be more cost effective or quicker for me to buy those skills in for a finite period of time to fulfill that need? So it's always about where is the business going and what you're looking for. And then once you know what the skills are, you start to talk about the individual. So if you're doing this planning, I mean, I talked earlier about training and performance management training that we've been doing. Some of that is the introduction of appraisals. Appraisals have a place, but certainly within small businesses, an annual appraisal, do you know what? Think about how quickly, particularly for example, during COVID, how much things changed in a week, let alone a year. So it meant that the objectives that were set at the beginning of the year were just completely unrelated to where we ended up. We quite often talk about 90-day planning. Planning 90 days. 90 days is manageable. You can usually see 3 months ahead. And then, start talking to your employees about what that looks like and setting their objectives on 90-day basics as well. So then it's about, you've retracted, you're looking at retention. What is the conversations which we do doing one-to-ones about where the business is going, what their career aspirations are, and where's the synergy? Where are you able to harness what you're looking to achieve along with what they're looking to achieve? And then it's looking for the opportunities, ideally within the business, to help to continue to develop their skills and yours. We get pushback sometimes, and when we talk about investing in your employees, we sometimes get business owners pushing back and saying, "Do you know what? What if I invest in my employees, and then I pay for the skills, and then they leave?" And my response to that is, "Well, what if you don't invest and they stay?" So, if you're going to invest, if it's a long-term course, I've invested in my team, courses that have cost a few thousand pounds. I've invested because it was useful for them and it was relevant to my business. But I put in place a training agreement. So if they leave within a certain period of time, then I can arrange for a proportion of those costs to be repaid to me. So that means I've got an opportunity to leverage the skills that they've learnt over a period of time, so that if they do leave, then there's a scope for me to have a return on that investment. So that's one way. But do you know what, Ben? There's a model that says 70% of training and development is actually on the job. So let's go back to that sales team analogy. You might have a salesperson who says, "You know what? I've been here a year and nobody has invested in me. I've had no training at all." And so my pushback to that would be, okay, have you had the opportunity to talk to new customers? Have you been able to go out to new customers and look at new industry sectors? Or has there been new products that we've been bringing to market that you've been able to start looking and seeing how you can sell to existing customers? What about that time when you went and sat next to our accountant and found out about business planning and how you structure the business? Or what about that time when you sat in on those interviews and you're able to help it be involved in bringing new employees into the business? Isn't that about investing in you as an individual? Isn't that about developing your skills and knowledge? It might not be sitting in a classroom and learning something, but actually, have you not been able to develop your skills in that way? And we talk about when you're looking to develop your skills, 70% of it is on the job, sitting with other people,
Absolutely.
learning those sorts of things. 20% of it might be reading trade magazines, going to trade fairs, getting some mentoring, your one-to-ones, with your manager once a month or so. That will be about 20% of learning and development. Only 10% would typically be some sort of formal training where you're sitting in a classroom or doing something remotely. Just 10% of it might be something much more formal. And even then, you'd still be looking to say, how do I, if that's formal training, what are my criteria? What, how am I going to know when they've learned those skills and they've started to embed them, those skills into their ways of working?
No,
So
absolutely.
that's the investment in them as individuals. And then once you've done that investment, it's about keeping it alive. So if someone's been on a training course, great, ticked that box. But then how are you going to hold them accountable to changing their skills, changing their approaches to embed those new skills into their ways of working? It's all about investment as you as a manager in your team.
Absolutely. And I think there's so many great points you've made there. I think that I particularly like the piece that you touch on in terms of what if they stay and what if you don't train in them? Because actually I think that probably one of the most successful things we've done within our business is created our graduate program. All of our team originally joined on our graduate program. And I think that one of the things that we do with our team is they have a monthly one-to-one. They've got objectives, they've got something to learn, something to go and research, something to do, something to push them out of their comfort zone and expose themselves. And what I say is every single month that you work in this business, and I say it every month, what have you added to your CV this month? What have you added to your CV? And we have conversations about aspirations every month. And actually, I think if I look at some of the team that have moved on. So Shannon, our first grad, marketing manager at Deliveroo. It's she's done a good job. And but actually she had huge value to our business. And the reason for that is she introduced some amazing things. We worked with her and it really worked for our tiny SME. It really worked for her. We knew when she was ready to go. And actually we helped build her CV for the next job that she wanted. But then if you look at some of the other people in my teams, Aoife, for example, who's been here 5 years, she really enjoys a varied role and her aspirations aren't to leave Thompson and Terry, but her aspirations are actually, she really enjoys feeling as if she's valued. She really enjoys a varied job load. And by actually creating that job that really works for both parties has been business changing because we've had really good people that other employers want, which is really flattering. But then at the same time, the ones that have left have gone on to follow their aspirations with our blessing, and we've known that they would go at X, Y, or Z point. But then in addition to that, the ones that have stayed have had real value to our business. So I'm just really kind of echoing your point there with a lot of words. I think it's so key to have those really transparent conversations and for it to be okay that, if you're going in 2 years' time, great, let's work with you to make sure that we create a win-win. You add value to our business,
Absolutely. I
value
mean,
everyone.
I speak from experience here because I've been very privileged to work with some excellent leaders in my time. And in one particular company I joined, I was fairly within my mid-30s when I joined them. And we regularly had conversations, me and my manager, about my own career aspirations. So I'd got my CIPD, my HR qualifications. But I was working in a business where I was working with directors that were several layers above me, and I was having to influence them and have them take notice and have to tell them why they couldn't do what they wanted to do. So I had to learn their language. So at the time, I was thinking about doing a master's. I could have done a master's in HRM, human resource management, or I could have done an MBA. And I chose the MBA. Although it was the more difficult route, it gave me that commercial edge to talk to finance directors and sales directors on their level, in their language. So it really helped with my influencing. But part of that conversation with my manager at the time was about my career aspirations. And we recognized that at some point it was possible that I may want to move out of the business. And she said to me, Katie, that's absolutely fine. Let's keep talking. When you are ready to start looking, you tell me. I will help you. I will help you. I will coach you in those conversations with the interviewers, and I will support you with that transition. Oh my God, I can't tell you, Ben, how much courage I needed, how much trust in her I needed to have when I started looking. Because it can be career limiting. But she stuck to her word, and what that meant was when I finally got the job on a significantly higher salary, with her support, she knew I was going. She was able to start thinking about her replacement strategy much earlier than had I just resigned and left on a month's notice. So it took immense trust for both of us. We're still in touch. And I always knew that if I ever wanted to go back, that door was open. So although it took immense trust for both of us, actually, it definitely ended in a win-win.
Absolutely, absolutely. Katie, thank you so much for your thoughts so far. Let's continue the conversation after this.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson. Sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. Our business breakfasts start from just £15. Find out more at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. I may be biased because it is a subject I absolutely love and always love talking to Katie, but I am really, really enjoying the show today. And if you are just tuning in, I'm joined by Katie Aldridge of the HR department, Newbury in South Oxfordshire. And we're really talking all about people and really planning your people strategy for 2025. So Katie, we've spoken quite a lot about training. We've spoken quite a lot about retention. We've spoken about what we're really seeing on the ground with the Oxfordshire, Berkshire, home counties business. And I think that now would be a good time to talk about crystal ball and what to do. And it's so difficult to give advice, isn't it, to businesses, because there's so many variables. Of course there is. But I think that whenever there is uncertainty, so let's go back to COVID, you had a percentage of businesses who close all the doors and have a really big reaction. We're not going to spend any money. We're going to be really careful. We might make lots of redundancies. Everything stopped. You'll have some that are quite strategic and have time to think. And then you'll have others who, I think Dan Sullivan's a really great example of this, who's been on the show a couple of times before, who worked in the event sector for stag and hen do's and corporate events in the middle of COVID and said, you know what, I'm going to really go for it. And he tripled the size of his workforce. He really invested because all of the big competitors that were ahead of him all put everybody on furlough and stopped. And it was a really great opportunity to get market share. So I guess to cut a long story short and to really kind of tie that together, what are the things that those business owners or HR professionals or managers listening now should consider in terms of, should you wait and think, do you know what, there is some uncertainty in the market? Should you be ambitious and try and get market share? Should you scale back? What are the things to consider in order to make those decisions?
It's really interesting, a question that you ask. And it's a personal thing to an extent. It will depend on that business owner's approach to risk. But the key thing for me is about knowing and understanding the market in which you're operating and the factors that will influence your business success. So for me, during COVID, we discovered that we were getting asked to get involved in things that just felt really uncomfortable and didn't sit with my company values. And so I stopped taking on new clients and focused on my existing and making sure that all of us got through it and out the other side with our mental health intact, because it was a really tough time. So I think the first thing is, right, we don't have a crystal ball, but you can get a best guess about what you think the future might hold. And also, of course, it goes back to your own company and your own business planning. What are your business aspirations? Where is your business going? And then planning accordingly. So I always talked about 90-day planning. I always look about what I see, where I see my own business going and what factors are influencing the business, but also what's going on in my own business. So I talked about investing in my team. Two of them have been on training, which was significant. It was taking 10, 15 hours a week of their time. There was no point in me pushing heavily for growth when they were having, to get the best out of the training, they needed time to be able to allocate that within their own time. But they needed the capacity to be able to do that and continue to have some kind of work-life balance. So I factored that in. We were a small business. I could make sure that we, of course, we continued to grow, but we grew and we were comfortable with being able to maintain that growth and the new clients that came on board whilst maintaining the other things that were going on. So it's always about looking about what's going on externally, what's going on within the company, and then how do we marry the two? So the last few months, we've just taken on two new employees. Again, now is not the time for me to be pushing for growth. Now is the time for me to focus on embedding those two people, giving them the maximal opportunity to know and understand our business, our ways of operating, and our clients. Once they're embedded, of course, I'm about to start on a process of a period of growth. But it's always about thinking about what's going on. You don't have a crystal ball, but you can see enough into the future normally to understand what your SWOT analysis on your strengths, weakness, opportunities, and threats might be, and how you might react to them.
Oh, absolutely. And how involved should your team be involved should be how involved should your team be with that? Because I think that some businesses and I don't mind sharing, we're a really great example of that. Like our team have all got access to the bank account. They know our challenges, they know our excitements, they know when their boss who is like a Labrador in a food parlor at times and gets really excited because we're suddenly going to do X. But I think that they've really, really embraced that. But I know we've got other clients who really like to keep their team within a sphere, and they don't like to share too much, whether that be for their own mental health, which is something that we've touched on, or their own kind of stress levels, or whether it be for confidentiality or whatever reasons. How do you decide how much to share with your team?
My view is transparency is key. The more that you tell your employees about what's going on in the business, the more they will understand. So, a long time ago, when I had a proper job, we went my business went through the, my employer went through a massive downturn. And transparency during that period, it was during we had a global recession. Being honest with our business was really, really critical. So we had regular town halls every month. We talked to our whole team. We had well over 1,000 people in the business, and we'd say, guys, for every pound that we're earning, that we're spending, every pound that we're spending on the business, we're getting 93p back, right? What our employees knew was actually we were going through a really difficult time. We were losing money. So when it came to salary reviews, they knew there wasn't any. When it came to bonus, we did pay a bonus because we wanted to recognize, but we were really clear that this was be valuing to value and recognize what they had invested in us, and to try and make them feel that it showed that they were important to us. When we gave promotions, and we still needed to give promotions, there was no money increase because we couldn't afford it. But as soon as things turned around, absolutely, we recognised that loyalty that they had shown to us. But we could only do that because we were transparent. So again, I try and replicate that in my own business. I talk to business about to the team about what we're doing. When I'm doing my business planners, I absolutely want to know what they're seeing, what trends they're seeing, because I can factor that into my own thinking and then communicate back what I think we should be doing. And the more that you can do that as a business owner, the more your team will invest in your business, the more you'll get a return from them because they are emotionally engaged.
Absolutely, absolutely. Katie, I can't believe how quickly the time has gone, but we are coming to that very, very final sprint of the show. And one of the things that I like to do on this show is really leave our guests or leave our listeners with a top tip from our guests. And whether it just be get your highlighter out and highlight this thing that we've already discussed this morning in your notepad, or whether it be something that I've not asked you and maybe I should have done. What would be your kind of takeaway message for those businesses listening at home?
Oh gosh, that is a really tough question. For me, we like to work with businesses. We don't mind about the size. We don't mind about the industry sector. What we look for in our customers is someone who knows and understands the value of their business, the value of their employees. And so, if there is one thing I think I would say, it's invest in your team. Make sure you recruit the right people for the role and then invest in them. Have conversations, giving them some really stretching objectives that fit with their own career aspirations, and then keep talking to them. Talk to them about how they're getting on against those aspirations and how you can support them to be the best that they can be. If you do that, you will get a return from them. They will invest in you in return.
Absolutely, absolutely. Katie, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for all of your time this morning and such insight, which you always share with everybody that will listen. So you're always so generous with that. So thank you. But yeah, that is unfortunately the end of the show. So if you are just tuning in, I would definitely recommend following Katie. So Katie Aldridge of the HR department, Newbury in South Oxfordshire, either through the website or through social media channels. And as a recruiter that has worked with you on numerous projects, I'd absolutely endorse you to anyone that would listen. So thank you for your support.
Thank you.
So this is the end of the show, but we are going to be back next week with a brand new guest talking about a very different topic, which is the first topic in 4 years on the Business Brunch. We're going to be talking about the UK space sector and the benefits for space on UK business. And to do that, we're joined by Bob DeMello of Prometheus Sensing Limited, so a new business there, which will be really, really interesting. Finally, just a reminder, you can listen to this radio show on the radio or online every Sunday at 11 a.m. There is also a podcast version which is available via all the major podcast platforms as released on the Monday morning. And do look out for the video format so you can see our lovely guests on the Get Radio Facebook page and their website every Tuesday. But for now, whatever you're doing in Oxfordshire, enjoy, and we'll see you next week.